it's helpful. I think a lot of people just think like, oh, if I just enable the free trial, that solves my problem. But there really is so much. No, it's not.
No, and I also think in an ideal state, right, you have like, there's all the talks about MQLs, right? And, but then you have a perfect state if you're in this free trial of these PQLs, right? The product qualified leads. So seeing people, how they're actually using your product, like where are they getting kind of those aha moments and when's the right time for sales to come in? So we didn't have that set up, you know, in place. So there is a future state. And I know that like if I launch a free trial again, it's one of those things where I've seen what worked well in this process and see those friction points and those hiccups and can definitely work to mitigate that ahead of time.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Product Marketing Life podcast, the show where we sit down with everyday product marketers to talk life, career, and most importantly, product marketing. My name is Colin Majak. I'm a lead PMM at Classy from GoFundMe. And in this episode, I got a chance to sit down with my friend, Allison Rona. If you don't know Allison, Allison is a director of product marketing and a PMA ambassador. And we got to do a deep dive on all things sales enablement and free trials. We talked a little bit about Allison's take that your website is your best sales enablement asset. Then we started to learn from Allison's direct experience launching a free trial. We defined the difference between a freemium offering and a free trial offering. And Allison shared her biggest takeaway from launching a free trial this past year. I really enjoyed this conversation and I think you will too. Enjoy the episode. Allison, the PMA rising star herself. How are you?
Hello. Good. How are you?
Good. I was laughing at your post when you said it only took 10 years to be dubbed a rising star.
Yeah. Yeah, 10 years.
I think at that point, you're a risen star. Like, it's not rising anymore. You've risen already.
There's still a lot more we can go, right? We can, the sky's the limit. So, no, I keep saying, you know, rising star, keep shooting, right? What's that saying? You know, shoot for the sun, land among the stars.
I'm thinking about it. I really only know a handful of people who have been in the product marketing space for about 10 years. I'm curious, what's it been like for you watching this role get so much more traction in becoming more and more ubiquitous in the tech space?
I love it. I love the fact that it is just a growing role. You know, people see that the value of it, it's kind of funny because there's that whole line, right, of product marketers being misunderstood, right? Uh-huh. And so there's kind of that conflict there where product marketers are, you see so many more companies, so many early stage startups hiring product marketers, even sometimes as kind of an initial marketer, yet it still is, I think, misunderstood what exactly it is they're going to bring to the table, right? Because also when you look at job descriptions, it covers like everything, right? You know, everything, messaging and positioning, sales enablement. And then you even get, right, like some job descriptions have like customer stories, right? And customer marketing sentiment, right? Even some growth stuff, thrown in there. So I think it really just kind of depends upon what the stage of the company and what you're going to focus on. And of course, it's going to evolve, right? So, the first 3, 6, 12 months at a company, right, it's going to change what a product marketer is going to do anyway.
Yeah. We've had a guest come on that talked about how as the role has grown and evolved, you're seeing more and more sub-disciplines come up within it, which I guess is the truth of any role. Like you probably take the original tech sales role was probably most like an account executive. And then we started breaking up SDRs and BDRs and enterprise account executives, mid-market. Same thing is very much true with product marketing, where probably lay the foundations of product marketing with just a PMM and then it started to become competitive. And you have launch PMMs and you have ones that are more external versus internal focus. Anyway, I think, one indicator to me that this discipline has grown a lot is how many people show up to the product marketing summits that PMA puts on, which is actually how we met. We met at the San Francisco PMA summit a little over a year ago, and I had so much FOMO missing the one this year.
Yeah. Well, we missed you too. I say we as if I put it on myself, but no, I missed seeing you there too.
Have you kept up with a lot of folks since going to that summit? Do you feel like that's been a entry point into having those friendships kind of last beyond that time?
I do. And the funny thing is I actually went to a summit 5 years ago. So that was
real.
I think it was the first one. Yeah. And so, which was really interesting. And that was like right when I was starting to dip my toes into kind of like the startup product marketing world. And so the PMA had one in San Francisco. I think it was their flagship one. It was actually in a mall. And a lot of these, like some of the sessions were in movie theaters, which is kind of fun and funny. Yeah. With people up kind of a little bit on the stage and, you know, had slides projected on the big screen. That was kind of fun. But yeah, I thought that the summit, I mean, obviously going there for the content is great, right? Don't get me wrong, great content, but meeting the people and really taking like those LinkedIn relationships, like what you and I, you know, I knew you before we met over there and I'd seen your name. Maybe I think we had messaged a little bit back and forth, but when you see somebody in real life and start to solidify those relationships and those friendships, then you can kind of keep things going, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and even since then, I've, you know, volunteered as an ambassador over for the Product Marketing Alliance. And so I get to see people in person here in the Bay Area as well. So super.
Yeah. Fun. I'm 100% with you on the connections being more important than the content, because content's great. Like I remember Madison Leonard did a great talk on product-led growth. There were a few other, April Dunford and Emma Stratton were there. It's like you have the giants of
100%
of product marketing. But I feel like the moments I remember more were going to coffee with people or a happy hour or a conversation in the halls. All that stuff has been more valuable. And I think extended beyond even just those moments. It's unique. I think your journey of doing the local ambassadorship has made me feel like I should probably host a Nashville happy hour. Just see what happens.
I don't even know. Yeah. Come. I don't know who's there in Nashville. Right.
But not a lot.
Well, I think there's enough that you can probably bring in people, right. And have that and have something going on in Nashville. I totally encourage you to do that.
Okay.
It's so
if
fun.
If anyone's listening and you're in Nashville, send me a LinkedIn DM.
Totally.
And we'll do this.
Totally. Yes. Okay. Get from the Nashville and the broader Nashville community too. So it's great to bring in people. Because if something's not happening regularly, you can make it a statewide thing. There you go.
Yeah. The whole state of Tennessee, PMMs. Well, I want to dive in. I want to get your takes on a couple things today, particularly around sales enablement and free trials. But starting with sales enablement, you recently shared this take with me that I thought was really interesting. And in my mind, when most people think about sales enablement, they think three, maybe four things. They think about a pitch deck.
Yep.
They think about one pagers.
Yep.
Battle cards. It's basically all some variation of slides, docs, and PDFs. Like it's all there. But your take recently was that the website ought to be your best sales enablement tool.
Yeah.
I love that take. Can you unpack that a little bit more though?
Yeah, I think it's all thinking about how do you define sales enablement, right? And for me, I'm looking at it even, you know, from the very beginning, right? I want to help my sales team talk to the most qualified, the most educated buyers out there. So the website, that tells your story, right? There's your message, tells you who it's for, right? What you do, all the things that we talk about, right? In kind of website messaging. And so if me as a potential buyer, prospect, customer, I land on the page and I am doing all my own education and I'm reading all about that, and then I click that book a demo button, I am a much more educated buyer, and I'm there and I can ask more educated questions, and, you know, and so I know what I'm kind of getting at. I'm not saying there's not a place for, you know, one pagers and all the things that you had mentioned, right? But just being able to kind of deliver that on the front end, you know, or really early on, I look at that as very strong sales enablement, just like having a strong pricing page. Right, is as good sales enablement as well. It's all part of the website package, you know, and how you're packaging up your offering. And so, of course, there's still going to be more questions, right? And you still have to get into the weeds. And that's where sales gets in, you know, gets into those conversations. But having somebody educated at the outset, that's killer.
Yeah, I'm fully in agreement with you. And transparently, I recently got a request for a one pager that I did not think was necessary. And at first it was, hey, we need this updated platform one pager. And so I thought, you know what? I'm a team player. I'll spin that up. No big. So I sent a draft over and they said, well, actually, we need you to like dive into every feature in the platform. We have a pretty big platform. And they set this example from a in-person event a few years ago that was over 10 pages long. And I started to think, this is an analog website.
Like, yeah, that's what it sounds like.
This is actually a lot of content. And so I asked like, hey, what do you think this will do that is different than our website? And I'd be curious then how are you thinking about that process of what is actually getting a website asset versus getting something that is not, that is a traditional sales enablement assets?
Yeah. I mean, a 10 page PDF, you know, analog version of your website. I can see why, like you had mentioned that was something from an event, right? Yeah. And I could see that having some kind of like ebook or physical product that you want to hand out at an event where somebody's not going to sit there on your website. That makes sense, right? For something like that. But to deliver, you know, kind of almost an exact replica of your website, that means that that buyer has not done their job or that seller is not, you know, really honing in on the part of the product, right? Or the part of their solution that's going to really solve their challenges. You don't want everything, right? Or it's very rare that every single part of your product, right, is going to fit, right, for that person. So it's really kind of honing it in. And like you, I'm a team player too, right? Making the one pagers when needed, doing those things, but it's not the entire website, right? So even like we were talking about just a moment ago, you had mentioned like competitive battle cards, right? There are certainly internal competitive battle cards that you can make, but I've kind of switched it up. And, you know, I think pretty much everyone has those compete, you know, pages, right? Those landing pages, you know, your company versus a competitor, right? Or multiple competitors. And those I've started, those can be more dynamic and you can update those a little more quickly.
For sure.
And easily. And so I sometimes hesitate to even do internal battle cards and just put that, you know, just use the external part as a sales enablement tool when it comes to competitive. But I hear you what you're saying, you know, on that one pager, right? 10 pages, you know, no bueno.
Yeah. I mean, I looked through, they responded to that question of like, hey, what is this doing differently?
Yeah.
And their feedback came down to a couple valid points. They shared like a few ways that like the PDF might have an advantage. And namely, it was like two main points. One, the PDF was more exhaustive than a one pager, but not as exhaustive as our website.
Sure.
So they're trying to find something that was like in the middle, which right or wrong.
I don't know.
That was a point. And then second was having a direct flow that they felt like they could control. So like rather than a prospect bouncing from this page to that page to this page, their thinking was if you give a 10-page PDF, they flow through and they kind of get the narrative the way you want it. Right or wrong? Because I think like in my mind, I'm like, all right, well, let them follow their intent. Structure the pages where you go the most important information at the top and then the weeds down below. Like there's ways 100%. To change the website. I'm curious, are there any gaps in that tend to exist in B2B websites that leave salespeople in a spot where they feel like, hey, that's not a real piece of enablement?
There is that sweet spot, you know, what you're saying is just finding the right type of content. I mean, I'm looking at a website right now for a company that I'm, you know, kind of contracting with and doing some fractional work and kind of looking at their navigation page and seeing about ways to really help, like they're redefining their products right now. And so kind of packaging them up differently, but the website doesn't reflect that. And so if we want, you know, I want the sellers to be talking about the product in a certain way and how we're packaging up, but the website doesn't reflect that, there's a gap right now. Right. And so if you need a PDF to kind of do that for you, then maybe it's something also that you might want to reconsider looking at how the messaging and how things are packaged up in such a way on your website. Maybe there needs to be, you know, if like that PDF is use case based, but your website is product based, right? And maybe there's something that's missing there. So, or vice versa, right? So it's really kind of looking at those and seeing, what is it? I mean, you don't want to speak to everybody, right? Like that's what we talk about, right? With the websites, yeah. But you want to really hone in on kind of the key product areas, right? Key use cases, why someone should buy. So if the website's not doing it, PDF's got to fill that gap.
Yeah. And even sometimes I feel like, yeah, to your point on like, you can't speak to everyone on your homepage.
Yeah.
Even if there are fringe cases, imagine you have a different someone in the buying circle who needs an asset that maybe they're not your champion who your page is written for.
Yeah.
Like a landing page can satisfy that. Or in your case, like use case pages can satisfy that. I think the thing I've become increasingly aware of is like it's easy to push back on sales and be like, just use our website. But a lot of times the reason they want these things is because there's maybe a gap in the website. Like there's something the site is not doing.
For sure. And
a lot of times that the requests for these enabling assets can almost be like signals on a dashboard that are telling you like, hey, something on the site is not, it's not doing the job that you need it to do.
Totally. Totally. Yes. I mean, your sales, they're the front lines, right? So know that if they're asking for things, something is missing, right? A one-off ask, you kind of like, all right, this is a one-off ask. You start to see these asks multiple times and you're like, I need to address this at the outset because obviously sellers then are spending their time asking you and waiting on you, right? And kind of figuring that stuff out versus just having something that's there. You know, on the flip side though, if they're asking for things that, you know, and then not using it, right? That's a different problem to solve, you know, right there, which I know that, you know, product marketers like to talk about, you know, as well. But you would also mention, you know, maybe there's a champion, right? Or an influencer, right? And your website doesn't speak to them and having kind of a one pager that's specifically for them. You know, I mean, I would argue, sure, maybe you should talk to them on your website. But I know as a buyer, if somebody just told me, I'm talking to a salesperson and they're like, hey, go read my website. That's also not a really great customer experience, right? You want to feel like, oh, I've made something that's just for you. So, and kind of bringing that in. So
that's where, I think landing pages can be so helpful. If you build something that's for a specific part of someone's journey, that's on a page, particularly too, because I think like rolling back old assets and rolling out new ones becomes so much easier if it's like that. Cause I mean, how many product marketers watch demo videos where they see a rep who's either one gone rogue and built these decks that are super dated, or they get looped into a deal and it's like, where's this one pager from? It has our 4-year-old logo and positioning we haven't used since 2022, like that kind of stuff. But if your reps are feeling like they need to go, it's either two things. Like one, the resource is not readily available and a website solves that. Or if a rep is feeling like they need to do something different all the time, it's probably a good indicator, or they're building it themselves. It's probably a good indicator that something's missing.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm all for, you know, reps kind of going rogue, as you say, a little bit when it comes to even some of the pitch parts, right? Or parts of the pitch deck, because they know, hopefully there's been some, you know, that those customers are qualified enough, right? And they kind of know what to target, you know, in that pitch. And so they don't need to go through, I don't think anyone should go through, you know, a 20 slide pitch deck, so to speak. So it's like taking what you need, really personalizing it, you know, to that experience, whether it's to the persona or the use case or whatever it is you're going after.
Yeah. Now, I want to pick your brain on a different topic. It's one that you've shared a little bit about before. If I'm not mistaken, earlier this year, you did one of the bravest things that a B2B PMM can do.
Yeah.
And you ran a free trial or implemented a free trial. I would be curious. I mean, can you just high level, can you launch what that free trial, like kind of give a picture of what that free trial was and why you decided to launch it?
Yeah. I mean, this was definitely a big undertaking, right? So big free trial, right? From a sales-led organization. And so there, you know, what was in place really, I mean, there wasn't anything in place going forward. You know, we didn't have a freemium product or anything like that. Kind of looked at what was in the marketplace. And so some competitors had freemiums. A lot of them had free trials. So we knew there was kind of an appetite for it. For us, really, a free trial was really all about, well, how do we convert more visitors, right, off of our website, A, and B, also trying to lower those acquisition costs. Because obviously you get a bunch of people and, you know, like who are using the free trial, they're more likely to convert, right? But I think you also have to have like a big picture. You know, what does it look like from a product experience, from a marketing experience, even from a sales experience, and what that looks like. So it's kind of a hairy beast, you know, kind of going into this whole thing.
Yeah. I think a lot of folks who are in sales-led orgs, it's almost like, I mean, a couple of years ago, the idea of becoming product-led was this just, was treated as this like silver bullet that was going to solve everyone's problems. Like, you got expensive customer acquisition costs, go product-led. You want to like supercharge your business, go product-led. But it's a lot messier than that. Like, it's a lot more complicated. Further, I think if you're coming, the reason I said it, that it's a brave thing, particularly for B2B PMMs, is if you're in a sales-led org in particular, one, it's just a huge jump. And two, I've not met a lot of salespeople who are particularly jazzed about the idea of having a free trial or any sort of product-led motion coming into play. So I would be curious, I mean, early on, I want to get to your learnings in a minute, but how did that initially land with your sales team? Like,
there wasn't an issue, honestly, with the sales team for this, because they were actually used to running kind of free trials themselves, but a lot more focused. So they would set up the free trials, kind of do it in a little sandbox environment. So they had it going on
like
for them.
Like a backdoor kind of thing.
A little backdoor, yeah. So they provided kind of the access and kind of walked people through it. And it wasn't for every customer, right? Like, when you have a free trial, it's pretty much open to anybody, right? And so, and that's also the problem. It's open to everybody, right? Uh-huh. Whereas, you know, the sales folks, right, they are more controlling over who is actually going on to their controlled free trial. So I think what's interesting, because it's open to everybody, it's, well, how are you going to really convert those customers, right? Like, we found we were able to actually start converting people at the top of the funnel, right? And thinking about the visitors on our website, our messaging was hitting. People were, we doubled our conversion rate off the website. So first it was just book a demo, right? And then we had the two options, right? Book a demo or start your free trial. And it worked, right? It worked to get more people into that funnel.
Yeah.
But then that now you have to treat those people who are in the free trial, right? That's a whole separate ball game, right? So you've got product tours, you've got email nurtures, you've got different tool tips, right? You're trying to look at seeing what they're doing. And this is that PLG motion, right? And you've also have to have an easy way for them to experience. I mean, we talked about experiencing the product, but upgrade and buy the product, right?
Yes.
And that involves a lot of product support, right? And a lot of alignment between what that journey looks like, right? From the very beginning at the top of the funnel, all through the sign up, all through, you know, what they're doing within the product, and then all the way to purchase.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where things for us, like that hiccup really, really kind of happened. So was in that kind of bottom of the funnel purchase aspect. So
as in, like, you had customers who then they would go through that and they would have the intent to purchase, but then they could not.
So they would have to talk to sales to purchase. So, you know, still there, what we didn't have a way for them, you know, we just provided, it was just a little too much friction. So there wasn't an easy way for them to buy within the product. And to be fair, right, when I started going off on this launch, right, for this free trial, we weren't 100% all in, right? Didn't know if this was going to work. So, you know, we really wanted to mitigate risk there, right? And kind of like, let's go in as in, this is kind of an MVP, right? So let's go in, see if we can actually get people in here, see if we can get people using, right? It's the kind of the startup way, right?
Yeah,
you
totally.
Kind of have to see, right?
Test
like,
it.
Test it, right?
Yeah.
It's a little bit more than like this, throwing the spaghetti up against the wall and seeing what sticks, but it's still, right? Like, you've got to just keep moving. So, you know, we were moving, right, to kind of get those customers, and that was what was working. But that friction on the other side and figuring out, hey, we really need to put some product resources towards this in order to make this a frictionless or friction-free experience. And that's where we just didn't have that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and that's where things broke down. So now the free trial is still humming along, don't get me wrong, but it's not converting, right? The ultimate goal there was to lower those acquisition costs, right?
Yeah.
So the ultimate, you know, ultimately that part didn't, it wasn't working as well as it could be if we would have been able to put more resources towards it.
So if I'm understanding right, then you're driving people to the bottom of funnel faster, low friction. It's almost like they're flying down to the bottom of the funnel.
I wouldn't say flying, but they were, but we were converting pretty quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. Doubling that conversion rate is massive, but is it then the introduction of, oh, now I have to talk. I haven't had to talk to a salesperson all the way up till now. Mm-hmm. And now that I have to, that alone is enough friction. Where it's like, I don't know if I'm interested in like entering a proper sales cycle. I mean,
yeah. And, you know, we tried some other things as well. So, and things started to get a little bit better. Because, you know, as in a startup, right, you're constantly iterating and tweaking every part of this, right? So it didn't start this way, right? Like obviously all through the process, tweaking every part, going through the funnel until we got to that point. But we actually even started adding a little sales friction into the process, which is kind of interesting. So when somebody signed up for a free trial, they now had to talk to a salesperson. So, you know, like sometimes, right, if they were qualified enough, so they could start talk to a salesperson, and then a salesperson could kind of help set them up a little bit. And that started increasing, you know, those conversion rates a little bit more. But it also was like, that's also an interesting way of looking at it. Then it's like, is that still the same kind of free trial where that you would, you know, that you want, right? That you expect from that process.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think what it says to me is how important it is to have the infrastructure in place to actually build a free trial. And it makes sense that if there's like a disjointed experience where they're moving really fast and then all of a sudden they have to enter a sales cycle, that's more off-putting than the fact that they never got moving as fast. Like it was always a little bit slower, but it's still more, it's faster than a strict sales cycle. Like that makes sense. And maybe there's a future state where that point of purchase is resolved and the whole, like they can move to purchase fast, but it's helpful. I think a lot of people just think like, oh, if I just enable the free trial, that solves my problem. But there really is not so much. No, it's not.
No. And I also think in an ideal state, right, you have like, there's all the talks about MQLs, right? And, but then you have a perfect state if you're in this free trial of these PQLs, right? The product qualified leads. So seeing people, how they're actually using your product, like where are they getting kind of those aha moments and when's the right time for sales to come in? So we didn't have that set up, you know, in place. So there is a future state. And I know that like if I launch a free trial again, it's one of those things where I've seen what worked well in this process and see those friction points and those hiccups. And can definitely work to mitigate that ahead of time. And looking at the infrastructure and the alignment, I think, is super key, right? Like, are we doing this as an MVP? Are we doing PQLs? When is sales getting involved? Does marketing have a goal for how many people we're bringing into the funnel? Does sales have a goal for what we're doing with those people in the funnel? Does product have a goal, right? And how they're related to it? And all of those points are connected because when they're disconnected, it's just all hell breaks loose, right? And so that's what I would look into that for kind of the next time.
Yeah. You know, I want to come back to like your biggest takeaway in a minute. Yeah. A couple of things stand out to me. I mean, again, just on that idea of it's so easy just to think like, oh, I can fix our funnel by doing this. Like I actually, my last company, I did the opposite where I steered us away from our free trial. So like we had a free trial at my last company and I came in and my observation was this free trial emphasizes and is for an area of our product that is not our core product. Mm-hmm. And what that does is someone signs up for this. We were actually getting a lot of signups. But they're landing in there and they're not understanding our main offering and our main value prop. And I was like, and we're not converting these people to deals. And so I said, hey, I want to like remove that CTA, take it out of the homepage, take it out of this, leave it in the one spot that is like a sub. We basically had two products. One was 80% of our revenue. This one was like 15 or 10% of our revenue. And so, all right, leave it there. But everywhere else, I want people just to book demos because we haven't built this experience to guide someone sufficiently enough to understand like what our main offering is, much less even get them to the point of purchasing that main offering. Like that's way far off. Like we haven't foundationally, they don't get in here and know and grasp our value the way we want them to, like, kill it. It's not worth just having a check mark to say we have a free trial.
Totally, totally. And that is a strong, you know, that's something that a good product marketer also knows when to do, right? Is when to cut and run, right? And kind of cut your losses. So kudos to you, you know, for doing that and for the team to think through that, right? But I also think, like, in that instance, right, if you're, it's also, is there something that you can think about in the product experience to kind of guide through that main offering, right? And show the value of that main offering. And maybe if it was a totally different product and they weren't related, then you can totally see that. But if there's a way to kind of, you know, highlight or, you know, surprise some of your customers with some things, then that's a no-brainer trying to figure that part out. But all this stuff is easier said than done.
Yeah, it's so tricky because I feel like in our case, the risk was that we instilled the wrong idea in our customer. And in my mind, it was like, I want to roll this back and re-roll it back once I feel like we can get it right. Mm-hmm. And there's such a tension because, like, you talked about the pressure in particularly startups is like test it, get an idea fast, that sort of thing. And I guess in my mind, we had learned what we needed to learn, which was, do people sign up? Great. We knew that people will sign up. Now we need to make sure, like, we sign up and they're actually, they have momentum in the right direction.
Yeah.
Because they were, flying through that sign up and then landing and then not logging back in or not turning into pipeline the way we'd want them to because we weren't given the right experience. You know, another thing that stands out for me, like another just difficulty here is thinking about that what you actually offer in the free trial. So I worked at another company that did a free trial. And we had this problem. So we were selling a personal finance video course and we would allow people to trial it for 14 days, which when I say out loud, like, you're probably going to know this problem is. The problem is they would Netflix binge it.
Okay.
And then churn out and not purchase.
I could see that.
You could see that. It's like,
I could see myself doing that. So
it's a video course. Yeah. You're like, wait, I could just burn through it. Now there's no way they could actually apply it and do all the things from it.
Sure.
And then we had another product that had a million users. Incredible. Awesome. 75% of them were free who had no desire to upgrade to paid.
Okay. Now,
both those are extreme examples, but they point to this like risk where you can give away too much.
Mm-hmm.
You need to give away enough to get them interested, but you can give away too much. So I'm curious, how are you thinking about balancing offering enough value without giving away too much that like people get stuck in freemium?
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking, for instance, for your example, your video example, right? Which was, although my example, you know, where I worked, this was for, they would get contact data. So email addresses, phone numbers, right? That sort of thing. Yeah. And so similar thing, you know, well, with yours, yes, you could binge at everything, but what if you just, you know, you could binge whatever you want, but you could only watch like 10 videos, right? So that would be kind of capping that experience, right? For sure. And that's kind of, so it's offering the full scope of the website, right? But capping that usage. And that's what we did, you know, that's what we usage. Did over, you know, it was based on usage. So we opened up the floodgate so that they could experience this because this was a conversation that we had as well, right? But I think that's the difference between freemium and free trial. Right? The free trial, you want to give the full experience for everything so that they know, right? What, if it's useful for them and what they would miss if they don't have it. So they, I want them to go everywhere and use every feature and everything that they could possibly do,
which burn is it out. Yeah.
Burn it out. Right. But there was a limit. This was for like those email addresses and phone numbers. So there was only 50 of them that they could get. Right. And if you want to do more, then you need to, you know, then obviously you need to pay for the full thing. We were having issues with people signing up with, you know, multiple email addresses, right? And kind of, and so trying to keep getting more. And so that's where we had to kind of go in and start blocking and tackling, you know, in those instances, which could have possibly happened. Right? I think that's just the nature of the free trial beast for anyone, right? People just signing up with like random ones. So we really had to do it, you know, had to deal with that. The freemium though, on the other aspect, right? That's where you just limit, right? You only give a really small part of your website away and you kind of show off some of those other parts of your, not the website, the product. So, and you show off the other ones and you kind of tease it out so that, okay, you have access to all these free parts of the product, right? For as long as you want, but hey, you want this other stuff, right? You got to pay a little extra for it. Right. So,
yeah.
And that's definitely another, you know, go-to-market motion. And so I think there was a debate, right? What should we do? Should we do the freemium model? Should we do the free trial? And, you know, I argued for the free trial because I'm a big fan of like, let's see every single thing that you can possibly do and you know what you're going to buy, right?
That distinction is so helpful for me. Thinking about free trial is you want full access to the product, gated on how much usage.
Yeah.
Versus in freemium, you limit the access of the product and you gate it on features that are available to them.
Yeah.
That distinction is super helpful for me. And like, I think about the first problem is like, we didn't sufficiently gate usage. Like we just gave them full access to the full product to use it as much as they could. Like 14 days was not a sufficient gating maybe. And then on that second product, which was, I misspoke, was not a free trial, was a freemium.
Mm-hmm.
The features themselves were almost not high enough value to drive someone to convert. So we probably needed to bring it inside a little bit more and cut off a few features or build something over here that was higher value to drive that conversion.
Yeah, but definitely. That's a helpful. I've worked at another company in the past where there was a freemium product and, you know, there were different tiers, right? And so, and sales and other people were talking the same thing, right? You're giving away too much, right? In those packaging. So freemium is also a different way of just like packaging your product, right? Thinking through even like a pricing structure, right? Yeah. So, because, right, you're just making sure you're seeing what they have to pay for and what they don't have to pay for overall. But it's interesting. You're saying, you know, 14 days, right, was too long, right? Because if you could totally binge all of that video content. For our free trial, we actually started it off as 7 days, you know, and then change it up to 14 days, thinking that people need more. And that's honestly, that was what the rest of the market was doing was 14 days. But we also realized and quickly saw that most people, they were logging in for the first 7 days. And then, you know, if they weren't getting what they needed, right, they stopped logging in after that.
Yeah. The thing that we ended up doing with that second product was we ended up basically moving it to, that first product, we ended up moving it to more of a freemium, where it's like you could always access the first one or two videos.
Yeah.
Those remain free. Anyone can go check those out. And if you want the rest, you're gonna have to pay. And I think a lot of it, thinking about your packaging, like how is your product naturally packaged? And that can be a helpful guide into whether freemium or a free trial is maybe the better path. Because if people consume it and engage with it one way that's based on usage, like that could be a good guide into trial land versus if it's really like, hey, this feature, this is the thing that people pull out their wallets for, you might be inclined to think about a freemium.
Yeah. I mean, this is where that good solid customer research, right, kind of comes into play, seeing what people are using and how they're using it and what their willingness is to pay for the different features, kind of teasing it out, right, within the product. So like you mentioned, having those first two videos, for instance, for, you know, that anyone can watch, but maybe the rest of the videos, maybe there needs to be like a 15-second teaser, right? Like a trailer.
For sure.
So that they know what it is they would get, right, from it. Similarly, right, if you're in a freemium product, you're using whatever features are that are free. But now all of a sudden you click on a feature, you know, there's something, maybe it's in a nav bar, right, within an app or something, and that you don't have access to it. It's grayed out, or there's a little lockbox on it or something to designate it. Yeah. And you click on that. And then all of a sudden within the product itself, you get a lot of like an in-product landing page that describes what it is. Maybe there's a video, maybe there's something else, right? But it's like a customer version of your landing page, and that's going to tease it, and that's going to show them what the value is, and going to, hopefully the idea is, right, lead to those more conversions and like upgrade now.
Yeah. You know, to close, I would love, now that you're a little bit removed from it, like looking back on that launching of a free trial, you've shared some of like the things that worked and didn't work. If you could take one big takeaway from your free trial experience, if there's one thing you'd say like, this is the biggest thing I learned from that, or would like if a product marketer approached you and said, Allison, what's the one thing I need to know about doing a free trial?
Totally. Yeah.
What would you say to them?
There's only one thing I would say, honestly, and that is align on the goals. Make sure that everybody knows what those goals are, you know, and everybody is aligned and is working towards those goals. You cannot have product marketing and sales all have different goals, or maybe no goals at all, yeah, as related to the free trial. If you are doing a free trial, this has to be a full go-to-market experience. And if it is an MVP, right, like how it was with me, that's fine too. But as long as everybody knows and everybody agrees that this, yeah, is kind of a go, no-go decision on whether or not we're putting more product resources on it, and we've made that decision and we're moving forward based upon that. So that may have been a long-winded answer, but just to say that alignment, you know, is 100% key. So,
yeah,
and I will keep banging that drum, gavel, till forever.
Well, Alice, this was so much fun. Thank you for making the time. If people want to keep up with you, where's the best place to do that?
I'm all over LinkedIn. So, you know, come on,
all
drop
it
into my DMs. I'm all over it, you know? So yeah, I love meeting other PMMs. So, you know, come on over and say hello.
It sounds like if you're in SF, come to one of the meetups that you do sometimes.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So I have meetings, you know, about once a quarter in-person meetups in the East Bay. So if you're in the East Bay as well, keep an eye out.
Cool. Thanks, Allison.
Thanks, Colin.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Thanks again, and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.